meteorite, Papa Lewis, we have not been chosen to replace the 33 trillion miners 600 metres under the ground. Which means you're stuck with us for many more episodes. I am Paul Hudson.
I'm still Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory. And in your face, Mike.
Oh, no. I'll just have to put up with being Mike's on this then.
You can do it in Spanish.
Me comprendo Michelle Son. Mishko. Yeah.
Nice. With apologies to Spaniards everywhere around the world, this is Season 2, Episode 19 of the Tux Radar Podcast. In this episode, we're talking Ubuntu 10.10. It's here, the Maverick Meerkat. At the same time, Microsoft appears to be admitting that OOO is a real contender in the space. We have a new You Doubt Us, this time actually from you. Of course, our usual sections, Discovery of the Week. In the hot seat, this time it's me and our open ballot. What do we think of the jungle? Don't forget, you can subscribe to Linux Format at www.tuxradio.com/subscribe. Visit the page, have a read what it says. We think you'll be totally convinced. And it's old too. That page is like, what, 5 months old now? We've added another 100 amazing tutorials and reviews and features and stuff.
That's the page with all the thumbnails, isn't it?
It is. It's amazing.
Amazing stuff in Linux Format.
Go and just look at it.
Do it.
Right. And following on from that brilliant introduction, it's the news. It's time for the news.
Wow. Right.
It's only been a week since we did a podcast, so not that much has happened, except for Ubuntu. Ubuntu.
Ubuntu. They drink it in the Congo.
10.10. 10.10. The Maverick Meerkat. Meek Maverick. Has been released. I can't say that much about it. Very morning, I upgraded my Kubuntu installation of 10.04. The installation went quite smoothly. There was a problem with the graphics when it restarted, in that they didn't work, and I had to reconfigure them, and it said restart. There wasn't any part to restart. But
you at the command line, you had to reconfigure.
It was through Ubuntu's kind of crude menu GUI. So there's just, you just get four options, and you can reconfigure X. You can go back to the setup, or you can run in Visa mode, I think.
It really shouldn't happen. I mean, it should just always drop into Visa mode anyway if it can't
make an X server work. Yes, you're right. It should go back to a GUI, but it didn't.
Wait a minute. Oh, that's my phone.
Who is it?
Let me pick and find out. Mark.
Oh, my.
Yes,
hey.
Mark. Graham. It's about Graham, isn't it? You should stop the transfer straight away. Oh, yeah. He doesn't have his money. It wasn't really a sterling endorsement, was it?
No.
Yes, I'll do my very best. Okay, Mike, okay. I found Ubuntu 10 out of 10, and it's great.
Wow, yeah.
And graphical.
It's the best Ubuntu
it's
ever.
Beautiful.
It's the best yet. I can't wait for 11.4.
Yeah, so has anyone actually tried it?
Yep, me. Because I've been making a special Linux format disk with an enhanced version of Ubuntu that also boots into Kubuntu and Zubuntu.
That's so amazing.
Such things aren't even possible, are they?
Only in my mind. And then I'm trying to make them into reality with the appropriate pits and lands on the DVD surface.
Are there any other magazines where you can get such a thing from?
I believe not. No, not anywhere in the world.
Wow. So we just be the best.
We are the best, yeah. But the two things I've noticed is there is that new font, which they're making a big deal out of.
Oh, yes, in just GNOME Ubuntu.
Presumably,
Why does the font depend on the window manager?
Well, because they can ensure that it works extremely well with it. You know, they can't make the same assurances of KDE.
Mm, or Tech WM or anything like that.
Well, the new font is pretty poor, allegedly.
but you don't agree with that?
No.
I've seen screenshots of the font, and I think Mike might have shown me. I don't know. You have to live with the font every day, don't you, to decide?
You do. The letter G is wrong in the font.
Oh, right. What's wrong with it?
Well, no, it doesn't descend far enough. It's
just a flat line.
The little tail
it?
Thing is too short. It looks very strange.
Right. Okay.
And you know, if at first you read a word, you don't realise different font, you get on with it. When you notice it, it's really hard to unnotice it.
Yeah.
It just sticks with you, and you can't see it every time.
So you've just spoiled it for everyone who's listening.
They'll all be thinking about that. It's like a dead pixel.
Stupid G!
I'll always spoil it. The other thing I've noticed as well is that during the installation, you can immediately apply Flash and other various codecs things. You can check a box, the first step of installation, and all these things will be added straight away.
I think that's a very good thing.
I think it's very good, yeah. I mean, you know, Stallman and co. will have nightmares over this.
Yeah.
But for desktop desktop accepted.
I'm fairly sure that was in my 24 things you change about Linux piece.
There we go.
Well, Mark, you do have that obviously red phone link to on your desk.
Only 23 Ubuntu releases to go then, and it'll all be fixed.
Didn't Mark tell you to put that in the 24th so that he'd look better?
Well, also, it does have the updates thing as well while it's installing.
In the background updates.
Parallel. Mm. And you said you get asked questions while it's installing, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, the first things you do in the installer now is set up your hard drive. So it then continues to copy all the files. And while it's doing that process, it asks you to create a user and fiddle around, you know, set a time zone stuff. So, it does save a few minutes in the installation. It does make the installation a bit smoother.
Yes, but really, we want the old Caldera days back, don't we?
Tetris!
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Forget inserting a username and password. There are more interesting things to be doing.
I can't tell you much else. The Kubuntu desktop that I got to, which is I think 4.5.1, is just the same, although my panel had turned a nice shade of blue. I might keep it. Interestingly, the new version of KPackageKit, which is a good change, is now application based, which means that you see like explorer like application icons for the things you might want to install, such as the GIMP and OpenOffice, rather than what I've complained about in the past, which is a rather random list of things. We talked about it in the last episode, where you type for search for SDL and you get maybe libSDL mixer first. So that looks like a nice addition, but KPackageKit is quite far behind the curve in terms of PackageKit interface. So that's all I can really say about it. But, you know, it's great. I'm glad, in fact, that it's come a few weeks before Fedora, so that we can look at Fedora in the next episode or in the next issue of the magazine.
Hey.
Also, I'm quite glad it's not really that exciting, because I remember with 8.10, I thought, that's really good. I have to abandon LTS 804 straight away.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, it's actually, I'll stick with 10.04. You know, I'm in no rush.
Yeah. Right, well, yeah, that's fair enough. Right, next news item, openoffice.org has been the target of a video by Microsoft I'm not saying this at all well, but Microsoft is obviously treating OpenOffice.org as a serious threat to its Office dominance, because it has created a video focusing on all the shortcomings in OpenOffice.org and free software and lots of open source aspects of that. Wow. The video is quite nicely made. It's got lots of scrolly words with real people, with real quotes saying things like, it's costing us 25% more to support open source software, and I can't use macros in this calc spreadsheet, so my IT department said I should switch to Excel. It's actually exactly right in terms of Microsoft trying to win back people who might have moved to OpenOffice.
I was watching it before. Some of the arguments are a bit dubious. One of them is from some sort of professor saying, oh, my students tried to hand in documents that they've made in OpenOffice and the formatting wasn't preserved. I mean, in most cases, these documents are plain text, and it doesn't really matter if bold
You say that. I've had that exact problem myself.
Really?
I don't know what you call it, but there's it's when you place text boxes. Not just flowing text boxes. You place them, because a friend of mine was trying to do a report for a class she was doing, and she had the idea was to show pros and cons something. So she had a person in the middle, and little speech bubbles coming out, and she'd placed a box over the speech bubbles. And when I imported it, completely muffed up the speech bubbles. They were in random places, basically.
Oh,
so if I saw that, I'd be like, well, I'm sorry you failed here. It doesn't actually make any sense.
Right.
So I don't think it's quite so dubious.
I guess if you're trying to use it as a DTP package. Well, exactly. Yeah.
I know, but not everyone uses it just to type stuff in. Mm. It's designed to have placement of word boxes. That's what it's there for.
Mm.
And although I would say on the flip side, whenever I've used PowerPoint on Mac, it's had worse compatibility than OpenOffice.org. For opening Windows-based Office files.
Really?
Office Mac, at least the one version I've got, which is 2004 or something on my work PC, that Mac here, is worse than OpenOffice.org.
So what you're saying, we should stop using Macs as well and only ever use Windows?
Well, the whole argument is incredibly one-sided. You know, they've made the...
There's no bones about that, is there?
X
doesn't work with Y, so one of them must be rubbish.
Well, maybe we should create a video. So, you know, I switched to Microsoft Word, but my exported complicated tables no longer work in OpenOffice.org. They're all messed up. Also, I think nearly every comparison was against Office 2007 when the video was trying to sell Office 2010. So, you know, how, whatever. Okay, well, as it's been such a slow week, I thought I'd speak a little bit about my recent trip to Munich.
Yeah, prima, toll.
Ausgezeichnet.
Wie war's?
I think it might be the third or fourth time that I've been to the Qt Developers Days conference, which is interesting because I started my Linux kind of career programming Qt stuff via KDE, and so I do always kind of enjoy meeting up with these developers.
I thought you were just a troll.
When you actually use KDE.
Well, yes, I do.
Get out.
You don't respect my freedom.
For you here.
The trip, in the interest of impartiality, is paid for mostly by Nokia now. Nokia? But it's still great. We do get a great chance to meet with developers and see what the latest buzz is going on in Qt. And it makes a big difference because obviously it's a big part of KDE. And maybe that is the biggest thing to report, in that there was very little KDE at this year's Qt Developers Conference. In fact, it wasn't mentioned at all. And I mentioned in the blog post that people like Lars Knoll were there talking about new technologies in Qt, like the Qt Quick thing. And Lars Knoll was the guy that created KHTML that then went on to become WebKit. And these people, you feel like, have left KDE a long way behind. There was no Mattias Ettrick, the guy who started the KDE
project.
Oh, really?
Is he normally present there?
And they usually like to wheel people like him out, you know, because it is important. There are other journalists there who aren't even Linux-specific journalists who are interested in what Qt is doing and how the two are working with KDE. Maybe in that, there's a new community forum that Nokia have opened up so that community members can provide feedback on the way that Qt is developing. But, you know, Qt is progressing quickly. There's lots of people picking it up. I don't know what that means for KDE development. The fact is that it's all moving towards the mobile space, is what they will say. And there's nothing in the new versions I can see that are going to affect or, in fact, improve KDE. Which might be a good thing, because it means that there's going to be a long pause between now and 5.0, which will take the KD team another couple of years to assimilate.
Still, sad face.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it is sad, because KDE by far must be the largest Qt project.
Yeah.
And for it to be completely ignored. I mean, they're happy, Nokia are happy to bring other community people to the conference. They just don't do the same with the KDE team.
Well, they seem to be pushing Symbian very hard still.
Yes, yeah.
Now that runs Qt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they must be looking at the big market. You know, if you're talking 2% desktop Linux usage and 1% of those are using KDE, then it's a really tiny market, isn't it? But if they can look at making this some sort of standard on mobile devices.
Well, if they have Qt, you know, it'll be wonderful, all these wonderful cross-platform apps that work just the same on Symbian and Migo devices.
Which they won't do, yes. What they want developers to do is to build separate versions for Migo and for Symbian devices and to make them available separately. There's absolutely no concession for making things easy for the user, which is something that we all kind of think is the way to go. So through the Ovi store, you'll have to download the Migo version, maybe even buy the Migo version and the Symbian version.
Oh, come on. That's bad.
So I don't know, the Ovi store is a bad bit of branding anyway.
Did anybody come up to you and say, hey, you're that K-Album guy, and buy you a Weiss beer as a result?
Ovi? What? Was it Ovi store? Ovi?
It's the app store on Nokia devices.
Obviously.
I don't know what it means. I've never asked.
It's not Finnish for app store, is it?
Finnish for awesome.
All right, you dare us, in which the listeners dare us to do something. But of course, after making a game and then after making a text adventure, we were a little teensy-weensy bit tired because we worked so hard, and we know that you all really appreciated our
We've
games.
We've put nothing on the site for like 6 weeks now. We're knackered.
We are,
We need a holiday.
I mean, Andrew's still working on his game. That's how good it's going to be.
It's going to be unbelievable.
We're talking about a 115-hour epic here that makes Final Fantasy VII look like
10 million lines of code.
Insanely good.
$1 billion.
$1 billion. So, yeah, we've had a break. We've recharged our batteries. We're ready now to take on a challenge of a good reader challenge we've got on. And, Paul, have you heard anything from any readers?
I have. I've had an email.
Oh, okay.
From someone who has numbers in his name, so I'm not going to read it out.
Scared already.
But the idea is quite simple. We all pick a tiling window manager, and use that for the next 2 weeks. Now, the one that always comes to my brain and Mike's is Rat Poison.
Rat Poison,
but there's X
yes.
Monad and a few others as well.
There are quite a few,
and
yeah.
The idea is get rid of your mouse for a little while, stick to the keyboard, and be more productive, at least once you've figured out all the keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah. So these tiling window managers, they don't normally let you overlap windows or anything like that. They organize the windows into sections of the screen. So you have panels and panes. The idea being is you never again have to reach over and fiddle around with that little hockey puck next to your keyboard. So it might, you know, save us all a bit of RSI. We might learn a faster way to do things. I'm intrigued by this challenge because I've covered tiling window managers in the magazine before, over the last 10 years periodically, and I've always wanted to really get into one because I don't like messing around with a mouse either. So let's see.
I've always wanted to try because the Rat Poison icon's great.
It yeah. is. I did the crappiest, cheesiest draw little thing in the world, isn't it?
I love it. It's cool.
It's just what it says in the tin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So again, readers, we encourage you to take part.
Yeah, you tried as well.
Was it Kevin last time who gave us a...
Yeah, yeah, that was a pretty good game.
A game that put all our games to shame.
Yeah.
So please take part. Thanks. And post comments, let us know what you think. And with such community loving, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week, in the hot seat, which is me this time, and our open ballot. What do we think of the Panasonic Jungle?
Right, it's time for the discovery of the week.
Yay, my favourite section.
Which this week is, has actually been a week.
Hey, it has actually.
Whoa! Yeah.
For once, we're not lying.
We should do weekly podcasts.
No!
Can you erase that bit, Graham?
Yes, discovery of the week, in which we discovered some cool stuff.
Mm.
You, Mike, you look like you're raring to go.
He's the only one standing in the microphone.
He's leaning towards the microphone. He's wiggling his knee in that way he does when he's excited. Go on, tell us.
Damn it, silly knee. I actually discovered something great. It's called X Jobs, and it's not like the X Bill game, but with Steve Jobs, unfortunately. That's what I hoped it would be like originally. But it's actually a rather more mundane command line tool. But what it does is XJobs lets you build up commands and execute them in parallel across all the cores of your CPU, or multiple CPUs, or multiple cores of multiple CPUs. So it's a bit like XArgs. You all know the XArgs command, where you can build up a big stream of commands and pipe them into XArgs, execute them at the same time. But XJobs recognizes the number of cores you've got, and it lets you string together commands with different number of arguments, and it supports IO redirection. So if there's a job you want to do, like a big batch renaming operation, and you want to maximize your octo-core machine, and XArgs doesn't do it. XArgs does have an option to run things in parallel, but it's really primitive and limited. XJobs is better for being able to determine your cores. And
I suppose running XArgs twice, one with no HUP or and the ampersand or something like that.
Could possibly, yeah, but there we go, XJobs. Really cool.
Sounds good.
It does sound good. What advantages would that give you? Sorry, that's a silly question.
Oh, well, if you want to convert a bunch of images and you're doing them sequentially, then at any one point it'll only be using one core of your CPU. But if you're doing 10 of them at the same time, it will try and spread them out across your cores.
Yeah, so it take about 1.5 seconds rather than 3 seconds.
Yeah.
But it takes about 10 minutes to do OGS and MP3s for the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh. So you could do them both at the same time.
They're potentially already multi-core optimized, aren't they?
They should be. It doesn't seem to be.
Oh.
I must admit, I've not looked at the CPU meters when I'm doing it.
You're making it up.
Yeah, it's possibly.
It takes me more than 1.5 seconds to probably type the command XJobs and blah, 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 blah.
Well, that's because you're obviously not very good.
Yeah.
At typing. So what's your discovery then?
Mine is, in fact, not a discovery.
Sweet.
I was desperate. I was thinking, what have I really found recently that I quite like? And the answer is Python. I had an exam on Monday and massively muffed it up. But to prepare myself for the exam, and I've got to admit I had fantastic, flawless revision for the exam ahead of time, I wrote a Python script in which it took all the Shakespeare plays I was expected to cover and the last 40 questions from the previous past exam papers, mashed them up and produced new exam papers on the fly.
Cool. That's probably how they do it anyway. So.
Possibly, yeah. And I did it using choice, which is a part of the random module in Python. And you just give it a list of items. I give it, you know, A Midsummer Night's Dream, The Tempest, King Lear, whatever, and say, choice, plays, and get back one item. So it basically picks an item and gives it back to you. along with a shuffle thing, which randomizes the whole array, and you can just read out the first three. So basically I said, choose a question, choice, with the choice command, and then shuffle the list of plays three times, and give me three items from it. So with choice and shuffle, just two simple Python commands, I wrote an exam tester, basically. It was very nice. And it was great, because I walked in and I knew all the questions and the answers, and still muffed it up. Bitter. Bitter man.
That's okay.
Sorry, Paul. Still, the Chilean miners are out.
Yeah.
They came up Juan by Juan.
The best tweet I saw at that was, those Chilean miners have no idea anything ever happened to the Gap logo.
Or the one I saw where it's, imagine coming out of the mine and being given a hug by David Cameron.
But once a day, 3 months on, and Apple still haven't fixed their antenna in the iPhone 4.
Yes. Right. Well, I haven't had a geeky music one for a while, so I thought I could do one this time. It's a piece of software called, stupid name, CTRLR. So is that controller LR? Controller. CTRLR, MIDI editor is what it's called. But what it does is it lets you edit synthesizers that don't have their own easy to edit interface. So there's lots of synthesizers that are cheap. That have small screens or no screens on them at all, and you can't actually get to the way that they create sounds. And older synths as well. So the problem in the past has been that people have created bespoke solutions for those synths so that someone will create a synth-specific editor, just say, so for a DSi Mofo, for example. And so they go to all this trouble, right. They create all this. Now, CTRLR is a framework for creating editors for any number of synths. You basically create this a profile of the synth you want to edit. You obviously have to go into detail into how you actually edit the parameters on the synth using MIDI. Somebody else can then create a GUI design to make it as intuitive as possible, including knobs and sliders and the layout of those sliders. And the whole thing comes together as a profile that you can use to edit a synth. And at the moment, it supports about 40 different synths from Linux. And if you're into synths, it's excellent. That's it.
And you are into synths, aren't
I'm into synths. I haven't... The synth in question that is called an Alesis Micron, which is an incredibly complicated synthesizer. It's got, 1,000 parameters. And on the top of the box, it has got one knob and six buttons to get to all of those parameters. So it's virtually impossible to do it. It uses a neat combination of pressing one key down with the key on the keyboard to edit parameters, but much better if someone could create a great big GUI with lots of kind of a logical flow. And so Micron is one of those profiles included.
Yes. And that just leaves that the just man leaves, himself.
That leaves me. My discovery is a physical object, which I'm holding in front of the microphone now.
Wow. Can you hear that?
If you could hear it, you wouldn't be... And I'm presuming you might not be able to make sense of it, because it's in Gaelic.
I can't make sense of that either.
It's my old... I'm moving house, so I'm chucking out a load of rubbish. But I found an old Scottish Gaelic reading book that is full of short stories that we translated as part of the university Scottish Gaelic course.
Wow.
That I did all those years ago. And it doesn't make any sense.
It's all in foreign.
But the weird thing is, I could understand it 12
really?
Years ago.
You could actually read, or you could speak a wee bit of Scots Gaelic.
Look how mad those words are.
Ab oigda, ygurda kud had died, yeah.
Sounds like German.
Ach, das weiß ich, ich weiß nichts.
That's what she said.
It is the language of Mordor.
Does that say Balrog down there?
It's a will.
So, is your discovery you're now 12 years more stupid?
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
Which wasn't really a discovery.
No.
This is an interesting story, but I really obsessively played the game Captain Blood. Do you remember that on the Amiga?
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
I played it so much that I didn't need the translation symbols to be able to read what the aliens were saying.
It just reminded me, because I bet if I go back to it, I won't know what they're saying. But there was a point where I could quite happily sit there for hours chatting away to aliens. That's it. That's so cool. So we're going to get Graham to type this all up and put it in the podcast notes.
Or a picture of it, perhaps.
But there's something about a boat, and there's a fella called Seamus and Donal, and what does that mean? Oh, that's the verb to be.
Always a fella called Seamus somewhere, isn't there, in these stories?
Ach. Ach, it's the word ach.
It's just mad. Mad foreign stuff, unless you're Scottish, in which case it isn't foreign.
Okay.
Still mad.
You throw it away then?
Yeah.
Of your past.
I don't want to be reminded of how I'm not as clever as I was 12 years ago.
What does it say on the cover?
I think it means a chance to read Coram Laevug. That's Coram Laevug.
What was it Bill Bryson stupid said? Language. Decided by two committees, one reading, one speaking, in different rooms. It weren't like talking to each other, you know?
I am now Carol Vorderman, and it's time for...
You're looking better than ever, Carol.
Thank you. In the hot seat.
Can I have another consonant, please?
you can have as many as you want.
No!
In fact, we could turn the wheel of destiny into... What was the game called? Countdown. Into a countdown board. So, yes.
That's going to require some DIY, Graham.
This is the point where Paul has to, and it is Paul's turn, has to talk for a minute about one of the subjects here placed here on the Wheel of Destiny, which includes such wonderful things as grub and Carol Vorderman and chili.
Chile.
And and Nokia. And Ovi. How to pronounce cute. Yeah, the Ovi store. Anything else on there?
No, that's what it looks like. Well, there's a few in the distance I can't quite read, but let's spin it around. Carol.
Okay. Let's spin it around. The wind off that is really blowing papers everywhere. And what has it landed on?
Well, it's landed on the Wheel of Fortune. Wow, how very meta. How self-referential is that? I've got a minute. The Wheel of Fortune wants to talk about the Wheel of Fortune.
Good.
That's all right. I can talk for a full minute about that if I try my luck just slightly. Let me get some sort of wristwatch up so I can time myself. This may be one of those times when I sort of grind to a halt after 15 seconds. We will soon find out.
Will we have the first failure in this?
Possibly.
Okay.
Possibly. You ready?
Let's go.
Let's go. Carved from the ancient Irish stone, also known as Giant's Causeway, is our Wheel of Fortune. No one has seen it apart from us four, because it's kept in a vault. Originally, we did sell one, didn't we? We sold the first draft on eBay. And that bought us beer for a couple of weeks. But this new model, which of course is ancient, thanks to the Irish Giant's Causeway rock it was hewn from, has a bewildering array of topics to discuss, but mostly grub. Unfortunately, no one has had to answer the grub question just yet because we're all terrified of grub and wish we all had Lilo back, or that one Graham found once that wasn't quite as good as grub, but maybe one day will be as good as grub. And each time we spin it, we know the deep feeling in our heart we are destined to answer for 1 minute whatever is on that Wheel of Fortune. It's incredible. It's only existing one in the whole world. And we spin it, or Carol here spins it, or we had Linus Torvalds spin it once, and we all fear it with dread and disbelief. I believe that's a minute.
Well done.
There we go.
Very nice.
Wow, can we write some new things on this, something easier perhaps, because it's getting a bit self-referential. You know, I don't know. KDE?
We've talked about KDE, haven't we?
Don't know, we've lost track.
The thing is
so vast now that changing it, we'll have to get some new pens and stuff.
Mm. New chisels, yeah, to etch the names in.
Definitely. We should just stick bits of paper onto the stone so that when we come to edit things, we don't have to chisel over stuff.
That's advanced.
Like that graveyard with a typo in it.
Really?
Well, not a graveyard, obviously. There's a stone in sort of on the way to my house, and someone spelt Northampton wrong. They've spelt it with like Northampton.
Oh.
And then they've chiselled an M over the N. It just looks really bad.
And the poor soul in that grave is just turning perpetually.
Where am I? And now it's time for our open ballot, in which we discuss the Panasonic Jungle.
Mm.
For those of you Graham's age, who've played Captain Blood, you may remember the 3DO.
Yep.
The last incredibly magical attempt for Panasonic to rule the gaming market. which fell flat on its face, that like things like the Wonder Mega. However, Panasonic did not learn their lesson. They are now back with a new attempt called the Jungle, which is an Android-based clamshell-style device designed for online gaming. It has already been dismissed by some critics as a non-starter, while others have said that actually Linux itself, as the core platform, may be a problem. What do you think?
It seems to me they haven't come in to offer anything specific. They've come in with a device where they thought, it looks designed by committee. We'll have to have two D-pads here and a full little keyboard, a little control buttons and everything like that. They haven't come along to say, right, the DS does X and the iPod Touch does Y. We're going to do Z. We're going to come in here and offer something new. It's just another wannabe console from a company that's very well known and reasonably well respected for technology, but doesn't have much gaming now.
Why do you think it's got a keyboard?
Oh, they're pitching it as something to play MMORPGs, exactly. Aren't they?
So, they haven't committee stuck on more D-pads or, you know, needs more cowbell. They have actually said, what do MMOs require to play right now? This, and this. Make them all in there. Mm. Obviously, end result is USB ports, HDMI out.
Yeah, it's got everything
all this
on
sort
it.
Of thing.
It just reminds me of the N-Gage. Much.
What a great product.
Yeah.
Is it going to be Flash-based games then? Is that what they're kind of hinting at? Or are they going to be native clients for Linux?
Well, that's the thing. That's why Linux makes it a curious choice, because Linux, as you know, does not run any of the major MMOs. But no, they want to appeal to online gamers. Anyone who plays any MMO.
Well, so does it have a 3G chip in it or just Wi-Fi? Or
no one's quite sure yet.
That's quite interesting, actually. If it does have a 3G chip in it, I could see that kind of working. Take your MMO with you wherever you go, just as an MMO device.
But is that what laptops do?
Well, yeah, but it is. It looks a bit smaller than a laptop. It looks bigger than a DS.
Fit in a coat pocket, and presumably the battery life would be longer than a laptop.
Yes. Have you ever seen World of Warcraft?
I've seen it over people's shoulders. I've never actually played for fear that I might become addicted.
So the players I've seen, maybe they're particularly advanced players, have more than 100 buttons on the screen.
Yeah.
Things aligned, or boxes of stuff around all edges of the screen, you know, magic potions and +5 swords of who knows what.
I think that's a really important point. Yeah, the people who play MMORPGs, I've seen them play, are very committed. They want to sit down properly in front of their computer for a couple of hours and get involved in
raids
or whatever. They
often have two computers.
Yeah, they're really, really committed. That's a very different market to the kind of standing at the bus stop casual gamer. That's the market that Nintendo has, and Apple's increasingly getting with the iPod Touch.
Get my jungle out!
Yeah.
Flip!
So are you going to, you know, be just sitting in Starbucks somewhere organising a massive raid with your 200 buddies in your MMORPG on this tiny little box?
Things like StarCraft and Warcraft are surely going to be far too big to work on these things. It's going to be something more like Farmville or something like that.
Oh, no. That's not a bad idea. Product, is it really?
A Farmville box.
Farmville box. Nothing turn it on Farmville. That's Farmville.
But surely that's what it'll be. It's some small scale kind of, maybe even something they've got planned. Because there's nothing on Linux. Warcraft isn't going to work on Linux.
Yeah, but you're smashing my dreams with my +5 sort of one Hokkaloogie.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, you could run a little Windows 7 netbook, probably for the same price.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, has there been any price yet? I didn't see any when I was looking up the price.
No. Well, let's face it, it's currently vaporware.
Yeah.
It looks ugly, too. I mean, from the photos I've seen.
It does look ugly, over-designed.
It's pessimistic.
Yeah, sorry.
It's positive. What do we like about the jungle?
Nothing. It's going to die. No.
Well, let's see what our listeners say. Listeners, tumbleweed. No, listeners, John Varr said, if that thing was running God, no one would buy it. What an ugly bit of kit.
That was a great game.
Linux isn't going to be a problem for the jungle. The jungle is the problem. Well, God was a great game. Do you mean gods?
Yeah.
Bit My Brothers.
Yeah.
Oh. Great game.
I heard that yesterday, actually, funnily enough.
Great game.
Magic Pockets. Who remembers that?
That was rubbish. Apart from on Motor Mouth, the TV shows where people phone in and say, jump, jump, jump!
down, Motor Mouth.
Daz Fuller said, kill it, kill it. I'm not saying it's ugly, but when it was born, they slapped its mother. seriously, Linux is the least of its problems.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, let's face it. There is nothing you can possibly say about this device. It's so awful. Is it just an attempt to make a quick buck from free software? Well, if it is, then someone's going to be extremely disappointed. Possibly, indeed.
Samsung.
Yeah.
Well, can I say something positive?
Go ahead.
Oh, well, never mind.
Better luck next time.
I just, they must have a plan. There must be a plan. They must already have some deal with some fantastic MMORPG.
Oh, I bet it's going to be, who's that? I also say nasty little French company. There's someone who does Flash-based games. That it's like Blizzard or someone big, and it's got a really silly name.
Yes, and they're very popular.
They are quite. They claim they're popular, yeah.
But it's not going to take much to pack a few of them into some kind of full-screen browser, and
Exactly, yeah, because it's the same kind of thing as World of Warcraft, just done in Flash, perspective styly, wandering around. It's a bit more childish,
a bit friendlier.
Yeah, a bit friendlier. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's cheaper too. I think it's one of those freemium games where it's free to play and you pay for power-ups and stuff. If they can corner the market in that, maybe.
It's a funny market for it, isn't it?
But aren't these sorts of things really, really popular in places like Korea and Japan?
StarCraft is so popular in
Korea. People die playing it.
Yeah, that's the one. There's stories about people merging each other to get enchanted swords and stuff.
Yeah.
So if they take even a tiny slice of that market, there'll be quids in.
Well, possibly, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Graham's saying they've got to have a plan, and I do see that because Panasonic is not a small company just messing around with a bit of venture capital. This idea must have gone through various boardroom meetings and layers of bureaucracy and management, and somehow they've come up with this idea of entering the game market. So,
but as you said, so did the 3DO.
Yes, and that was disastrous.
And also, even a tiny chunk of that market would make many money. There's a post from EA Laos. I'm not sure you saw this. You probably saw this, Graham. It's copying the EA spouse thing that someone posted in EA Inside Views.
Oh, yeah.
This is a guy who just realized he's going to lose his job developing Warhammer, one of the MMO games that EA makes on behalf of Games Workshop. He said, listen, we're now selling 300. We have 300,000 active accounts, which is nothing at all, and it's falling. So if 300,000 active accounts on an MMO is not enough to sustain it, then, you know, Panasonic is going to have to win quite a large chunk. I mean, maybe the deal is something along the lines of sign up to this thing, 10 bucks a month, we get 50 cents. And if there's, like, you know, 10 or 15 MMOs that work on the device, maybe they can make some money off this. But also, I don't think anyone plays more than one, do they? Presumably, you only play one MMO. You don't see anyone going Eve and World of Warcraft because it must just destroy your life. There's no time left. Mm-hmm. I just don't see where the money's coming from. You know, 300,000 isn't enough to make them money back.
Doesn't Pigstop play too? Plays Eve.
Plays Eve.
He plays Eve with two accounts.
Oh, right.
That's what's more likely. I think people get hooked on one and play that to death, literally, sometimes. We have Mohan, who says, that thing looks like an Atari Jaguar controller of the last decade with a scratch to it. I like the Jaguar. You like Jaguar too, right?
No, the Jaguar's controller was an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. It's nice to see other players in the video game hardware, but sadly, I don't think it'll make it.
I'm still waiting for the successor to the 3DO, the Panasonic M2. Do you remember that?
No.
That's what they announced. Despite the fact the 3DO didn't sell very well, they were already busy working away on the M2, which was supposed to be the most powerful thing in the universe. I remember reading about it in Edge in, like, 1994. So,
one of my favourite games was on the 3DO, which was Space Hulk Vengeance of the Blood Angels.
I remember hearing of Space Hulk. Yeah. Did you have a friend who had a 3DO?
I didn't play it on the 3DO. I played the port to the PlayStation 1. But it started life on the 3DO and was envisaged as a 3DO game because it had network play.
So you see more Warhammer, you see, straight away. There's the link. That's a great game, though.
It was, yes. The Amiga versions were a bit poor, but...
Toei said, discontinued only 6 months after release, calling it now, was the best comment he's seen on it.
If it makes it that long. I mean, Kin was discontinued 3 months after its release, wasn't it? Microsoft's
was it? I thought it was like 3 minutes after its release.
Quite possibly, yeah. I don't think this will probably even make it to the shop shelves now. It's just so fundamentally flawed in every way.
You'll get it in some dirty corner in Akihabara, Paddy.
There'll be some Chinese rip-off somewhere, yeah.
Running Windows 7.
So, are we saying then that ultimately this is actually a bit of embarrassment for Linux?
No, I don't think so, because I think there's probably still scope for a good console powered by free software, but there's just so many things wrong with this particular implementation.
And if somebody wants to try, you know, that's what Linux is for.
I guess, yeah.
If they believe there's a market in some part of Korea or whatever it is they want to do, then great.
But presumably, I mean, I know it varies, particularly with the TiVo kind of lockdown, maybe this box is open, hackable?
Yeah, but, you know, it's like the Game Park and the GP2X, things like that. They could perhaps make it, but only a tiny, tiny number will ever sell. And, you know, it was always fun to mess around with the GP2X and those hackable consoles and the Pandora, but ultimately we're talking 0.001% of the market here compared to the DS and iPod Touch and PSP.
Yeah.
It won't happen. This is dead.
And with such happy positiveness, we come to the end.
I've just remembered, actually, as a one last thing.
Yes.
There was another Linux console that was going to be launched. This was way back in 2000. Can anybody remember this?
What, handheld?
No, but a Linux-powered console that was quite well hyped at the time. It was going to change everything.
Was it the X Stormen box?
The GNU X Stormen box. Mm. No, it wasn't. It was actually called the Indremer.
No.
Does anybody remember this?
The name.
Vaguely. This was in back in 2000. There was this plan to launch a Linux-powered video game console. So there were prototypes drawn up and artist renditions and everything like that. And the system was going to be the Indremer L600 entertainment system. Of course, they immediately muffed it all up by giving it a number in the name. You don't do that. You launch the SNES or the Famicom or the game. Not
Mega
the
Drive. 600.
Or the Nintendo 64.
Well, true.
CD32.
Well, that was good. Yeah. No. This is more like Amstrad GX 400 type thing. But
Amiga 500. Prove that one wrong.
But yeah, their goal was to create a video game console based on common PC hardware with an open source Linux operating system. So, you know, basing it on PC hardware perhaps was made sense before time. That's what Microsoft did with the Xbox. But it completely failed. Nobody was interested in it. And the company founder said that he needed more than $10 million in capital in order to get this product launched. And so when he realized it was all gone and it could never work, he gave a bit of advice to any successors, and he said, finish the product before talking about it. And I think that's true, and I think this reflects on this little handheld we were talking about here. The best thing to do is to stand on stage, say, here's this product, it does X and Y, and you can buy it in today or in a week or even in a month, but you can buy it. Here it is. Yeah. That's what Apple does with their hardware. They always say you can buy this now or in a couple of months and it works. Not this is a prototype or anything like that.
Has anybody ever told you an Apple fanboy?
Yeah, I love it. I'm converted and happy now.
And with Mike coming out of the closet, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget the notes, once Graham has typed up all that Gaelic, will be on the website. And of course, we want to read your comments out. We like hearing from all one of you. Email me at paul.hudson@futurenet.com and we will read out the best comments. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye. Bye.